Welcome, writers, dungeon masters, and creatives to the World Builders Tavern! Today we are talking about the world of the hit show Good Omens. Be warned, we are discussing the whole of season one, so consider yourself spoiler alerted. Now grab an ale and pull up a chair. Your friendly barkeeps Emma, me, Allison,
hi,
and Christiana,
hello,
are delighted to have you here.
Cheers!
So this was my first time watching Good Omens, and I have to say, as much as I liked it, I did not like it as much as I thought I would based on how much people had raved about it. Like, for me, I wouldn't rave about it, but I had a solidly good time enjoying it, if that makes sense.
Yes, and I think overhype is a real problem, and I have, like, a bit of a theory as to why I think Good Omens got that treatment. And it's because even though it was originally released in like 2019 on Amazon Prime, it started airing weekly on BBC January to February, like end of February 2020, right before the pandemic hit. So I think it might have been like one of those odd little pandemic special interests that people picked up. Is my theory is why so many people.
Everyone loves Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett and also the actors in the show. I mean, I loved the show. I actually enjoyed it even more watching the second time than I did the first time. So I'm not on the same page as Emma, but that's okay.
Yeah. I think I enjoyed it more the first time, but I think also part of why I'm saying I think it might have been a pandemic thing is because it was definitely a pandemic thing for me. I remember hearing a lot about it right at the beginning of lockdowns, and then you're like trapped in a tiny apartment with two cats and your spouse, and you're like, what are we going to do? I guess we'll watch Good Omens. And while the world is crumbling around you, you're like, this is amazing. I had such a positive experience with it the first time. The second time I still did too. I still really enjoyed it. But I think it, you know, it hit just all the right notes at the right time the first time I watched it. So
that makes sense.
I also just loved Michael Sheen and David Tennant and their chemistry so much.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Friendship is so cute.
I know. All their interviews together too and stuff. I'm like, I just want to have coffee with you guys and chat about the world. Come to the tavern. We'll share an ale.
Oh, that would be so good. If they're listening, come guest star on our show next season.
Dear David Tennant, please join our tiny podcast.
You know, I think maybe one of the places where the show I started to not enjoy it as much, I think was episode 4. And I think it was because it became less about the duo because the other characters were becoming so prominent. I think I really loved the Angel Demon duo. And if it had been kind of more focused on them the whole time, I probably would have had as much rave. Because episodes 1 to 3, I think, were my favorite. Like, I loved the first half. The second half for me was where I didn't love it quite as much.
I will say, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, Christians are going to be upset about this. And I was right, of course.
Yeah, are they?
Because, I think a lot of it was just, there's angels and demons, and they're messing up the biblical
theology. Playing.
It's not accurate what they're saying, what they're doing. Like, that's the point, is that they're drawing on this mythology from the Bible and playing with it, and it's satire, and it's not supposed, you're not supposed to think it's real. Like, what are you thinking? They're trying to make an accurate account of this.
Totally. Well, let's dive into that a little bit more. So let's talk about world building based on an existing mythology.
I really enjoyed what they did in this show. So starting off with the story that everyone knows, at least everyone I know knows, about not heaven, being in the garden, and Adam and Eve. And Eve was tempted by a serpent to eat an apple. And then they throw in this apple imagery all the way through the show now. And I thought it was really interesting that So often people think that Satan and the serpent are the same person. And so I watched part of a large part of the show thinking Crowley was Satan. And then I realized he wasn't, because Satan comes in later and is not the same person.
He's very different.
And so I thought that was kind of neat. And just the way they played with it, like Aziraphale has the sword that he gives to Eve because he's sad that
they're bad for her. Yeah. I thought actually that whole conversation between the characters when he reveals that he gave away the sword was so funny to me, and also weirdly philosophical, where he was like, God, I hope I didn't do the wrong thing about giving away the sword. And then David Tennant's character is like, oh, and I tempted her with the apple, but look, now they're free. I hope I didn't do the right thing.
Yes.
That was so good.
Imagine
the angel does the wrong thing and the demon does the right thing. And I thought that was, I genuinely chuckled, but I was also like, that's kind of deep. Like, what is the wrong thing in that situation, right?
Yeah, there's a very careful balance when you are working in a mythology or story or tradition that already exists and people are familiar with, because you have to keep it the same enough that people recognize what you're talking about, but you've got to make it different enough that it's unique and interesting and there is a reason for you to rehash it, which I think they did a really good job of. Like, it was definitely, you know, like they hit all those main points that we know from Christian story, you know, Adam and Eve, Jesus, angels, demons, like all of that was very recognizable, but then they did switch it up in key ways that made it unique. Like the, you know, angel and demon maybe going off their paths a little bit, messing with some of the history a little bit. So I thought that they did a really good job of that kind of world building. I thought was great.
I really liked what they did with Crowley as this demon. So in a lot of Christian theology considers just demons are these really evil things that have this agenda, which is to like make people sin, right? And Crowley does not care about that. He's just like, I just want to live my own life. And like, I don't like people and I don't go out of my way to help them. And I'll like, I might go out of my way to annoy them or whatever, but he's not like working a job as a demon. He's just like, I just want to survive and enjoy life.
Yeah, he wants to keep things interesting, and like that's his motivation. Like, he doesn't care about it. He just wants to have fun and be eccentric
and not have the world be destroyed in fire because he likes living there.
Yeah, that's where all the fun things are.
Yeah, that's one thing that I really loved about the kind of the foundation of their relationship was the fact that they both really came to love Earth and humans, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not Christian. I don't have really any experience with the Bible or biblical stories or anything outside of what I see in general media, but you would think an angel would be like, I want to go back to heaven where I belong, and a demon would be like, I want to go back to hell where I belong. But instead they're both like, actually, these people are kind of cool. I kind of like it here. I thought that was a super interesting point.
Yes, and they also sort of twist the understanding of heaven and hell. So you know, in growing up as a Christian, heaven was this supposed to be this amazing, wonderful place, and God was this benevolent, kind being. But the show rightly points out how the God that the Israelites write about in the Bible is incredibly like wrathful. That's not necessarily like if God exists, what a real God is, but the God that the Israelites, the God that the biblical writers write about, they're looking at it through this lens of war and their current culture, and they're writing about God in that way. And Christians sometimes just ignore that part of the Old Testament.
Yeah, I think the funniest thing for me about that was that they made heaven a bureaucratic nightmare.
Yes, exactly.
Worked for the government for almost a decade, and I swear it was so disturbingly accurate. Like, you were issued with a issued with these items. Why aren't you returning them? And he's like, I'm sorry about the sword, trying to explain the sword. And they're like, no, you had a corporeal form or whatever it was, yeah. and like then get on to him about these things. It made me laugh pretty hard because I'm fairly certain I've encountered almost that exact scenario just without a flaming sword.
and hell wasn't any better. It seemed
yeah.
just the worst. Like I understand why Crowley doesn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting. I'm thinking about something that Christiana, you said that both the angel and demon really came to love Earth and people, but I'm not sure I entirely agree because I think they both came to love Earth, but I don't think we really saw them caring about any people, really. Like, they didn't have any human friends. They didn't want to murder Adam, but they also didn't seem to really, like, have a personal investment in, like, humans, which I think is an interesting take because that usually does end up being the thing that, like, happens.
Yeah, that's apocalypse
stories, like, oh, humans are better than they seem, we shouldn't kill all of them. Whereas this time I don't think they really care about people. They just want to have the Earth around, which kind of needs people to run it, but that's like a secondary thing.
I mean, Aziraphale does kind of at least show some care, like when they hit the witch with their car. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, we've got to bring her home. And Crowley's like, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, Crowley does not care about that at all.
I think where I was coming from when I said, oh, we like humans, they like humanity as how the Earth exists, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Aziraphale loves Earth because he loves these, like, very human delights, mm-hmm. right? He likes rich oak and books and things that wouldn't exist without human involvement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And same with Crowley. Crowley loves flashy cars and cool sunglasses and things like that wouldn't exist without human involvement.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, when I say we kind of like humans, I think I'm referring more to kind of society and how it makes the world versus individual humans.
Yeah. I'm totally on board. I just thought that's a very interesting, because I hadn't thought about that, but like, it's very interesting because they don't really care about like individual people all that much, which is an interesting world building choice. I also thought an interesting world building choice was that they did choose to humanize both of them. Like, you know, they both have these human interests, but then also, you know, Crowley isn't as evil as you'd expect a demon to be. Like, he's more just like an eccentric rock star kind of selfish guy. And then Aziraphale also, you know, he's a little bit, you know, he has flaws. He's a little bit naive. He's a little bit too trusting. He's a little bit
to bend the rules.
With Crowley. Yeah. He's also a little bit selfish, kind of, so it's interesting that they made the choice to humanize both of them, which I think is a good choice for most of the time, because I think that people will engage with your world more if they can connect to it. And if things are too alien, so if there's like just perfect angels and horribly evil demons, it's harder to connect with it, because obviously we are humans and so we like things that are human like.
Neither of them have bought into the agenda of their respective overlords.
Mm-hmm. But they did still show, like you mentioned, after hitting the witch with the car and stopping and saying we need to bring her home, he's still a good being kind of at the base of him. Mm-hmm. but it's in like a smaller ways. Like, it, you just because you stop when you hit someone with a car does not make you a good person. That is like literally but it's also on the flip side with Crowley, where it's like he is evil, but he's not like torturing people. He's like emotionally abusing his houseplants.
Scene was so good.
That was so funny.
Yeah, but it's not like you're not gonna look at that and be like, how can I ever relate to this person?
Yeah.
Right. And same with, and I think it's the same with Aziraphale, where it's kind of that if you made them too good or too evil, exactly what you were saying, Emma, like, how do you relate to them? Because it's like, I can't really, I mean, I could try, and it certainly happens with characters, but it's easier to relate to an angel who just does the bare minimum of the right thing in a bad situation than an angel who is like curing famine and disease for the entire world. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to relate to an evil character. It would be very hard for me to relate to a character, although again, they still exist, where they're like, I am eating people. But I could relate. One of my houseplants just died like last week, and I saw that scene and was like, maybe I should start building my houseplants. You know?
Yeah.
They're not so far on the spectrum to make them hard to relate to.
Yeah. I thought another interesting world building thing that they did with the mythology is that heaven and hell were not omniscient. Like Crowley and Aziraphale kept having to like check in and send back reports, which was great for the story in a couple of ways. Cause one, it builds into the, like the bureaucratic nature of both. And so it just like fit the world that they'd created. But then plot wise, it also makes sense as to how they're able to like get away with all of this stuff because heaven and hell don't know what they're doing all the time. So it's fun to see little world building things like that that just fit so well and do double duty and like are accomplishing more than one thing at once.
That's a good point.
Speaking of the mythology, I really liked how they showed David Tennant and Michael Sheen throughout the ages, like experiencing all these stories that from the Bible. The scene where you see Jesus dying is like shockingly emotional. Like I had a hard time watching that. I'm like, this is horrific. And that, especially that like people actually did get nailed to crosses is just like terrifying. And I just loved the dialogue where David Tennant's like, sorry, Crowley's like, what did he do that was so terrible? And Aziraphale's like, he told people to be nice to each other. Charlie's like, oh yeah, that'd do it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh my goodness. Particularly after living through a pandemic. It's just like, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That scene in particular, I agree, was like so well done. So episode 3 in general was my favorite episode, like just because of that, like seeing it through the ages. I loved it. And that scene in particular was so well done because they had this like humorous exchange in the middle of the crucifixion, and yet it was still like the humor was still humor, but the whole scene was also still like horrifying.
I don't know how they managed to do that, because exactly right, it was horrifying, and at the same time I'm like laughing at what they're saying, or like enjoying watching their conversation. Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett in a nutshell, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was also, I think it was in that scene or somewhere else. And I just have my notes from that episode. Their exchange where Aziraphale's like, you're up to no good. And then Crowley's like, you're up to good. That just like hit me just right. I was just like, oh, that's great. I love that.
I also really liked that sequence for showing character development, right? Like it was simultaneously world building and also character development, which a lot of world building is and can be, right? I think that was a nice little like snapshot example of that, where it's like they're confirming in the world these events happened as a lot, because they've already twisted the mythology a little bit. We know some things are different, but they're confirming this is the same, this is the same, this is the same, that kind of thing. But also using it as an opportunity to explore those characters through that time period. I think it was really, I felt like more connected to them as a couple in my head. Not like a literal couple, but like, you
as
know
a
what
duo.
I mean?
As
a duo, I felt more connected to them in their relationship than I did before it.
Totally.
Yeah. It's time for Proprietor's Picks. A new segment of the podcast that highlights new and upcoming book releases, because your to-read pile is long enough already. If you like Good Omens, you might also like The Remarkable Retirement of Edna Fisher by E.M. Anderson, which is coming out on April 21, 2023. You guys, this book sounds so much fun. I'm going to read you the first part of the synopsis. When you're a geriatric armed with nothing but gumption and knitting needles, stopping a sorcerer from wiping out an entire dragon fighting organization is a tall order. No one understands why 83-year-old Edna Fisher is the chosen one, destined to save the knights from a dragon riding sorcerer bent on their destruction. After all, Edna has never handled a magical weapon, faced down a dragon, or cast a spell. And everyone knows the Council of Wizards always chooses a teenager like the vengeful girl ready to snatch Edna's destiny from under her nose.
I'm already obsessed with this.
Right?
I think there needs to be more old protagonists.
Me too.
Like any group of people that isn't largely represented in literature deserves stories, right? And so, you know, this makes me excited for that reason alone. Mm-hmm. But it sounds so funny. Like I think of my grandma when reading this. She's like a 93-year-old little Ukrainian baba who's like really intense all the time. I could totally see her being begrudgingly taking on an entire field of dragons.
Right.
She would just be like, I gotta do this myself, and like go out there and like with her like wooden spoon and start smacking them kind of thing. So
yeah,
I think it sounds like Good Omens in the humor.
Yeah, I'm definitely adding this to my to be read pile. It sounds fantastic and super funny.
Yeah, so, just the tongue-in-cheek like humor, and it just reminded me of Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman.
Yes.
And that kind of feeling. And I haven't actually read this book because it's not out yet. So if you do read this book after it comes out in April, you should tweet to us or email us and tell us what you thought about it, because I want to hear about your thoughts.
Time for last call. So if someone is building a world that is based on or inspired by an existing mythology, what are some questions that they should ask themselves that will help bring that world to life?
I think you need to ask yourself, how do the main characters interact with the mythology, particularly with people who love world building? Sometimes you get a little carried away. Sometimes we get a little carried away with all this background information that doesn't actually impact the characters at all. And so we can take inspiration from Good Omens in that Aziraphale and Crowley are sort of neck deep in all this history and Christian mythology, and they've lived it, even though they're not, they're almost outsiders from it and observers. They're still also in the middle of it.
That's a good point, Allison, because I've had so many novels die in the world building stage. It's so easy to get lost in trying to make everything perfect.
I mean, it's so much fun
writing. Yeah.
And also just like lots of times you need to know something, but the readers might not.
Yeah.
So like,
Still world build. I think sometimes people get so hung up on making sure everything is absolutely aligned that they don't let the story happen. So
At the end of the day, you're here to entertain people. So like, don't let world building get in the way of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My question would be, if you're using a pre-existing mythology, what are you keeping and what are you not? I think Good Omens does a great job of keeping the right things and discarding some of the things that wouldn't really add to the story in any way. They plucked the key pieces that would move the plot forward and keep things interesting and funny and entertaining and thoughtful and meaningful, and didn't worry about the rest. And I think that's a really important decision. What are you keeping? Why are you keeping it? Does it move the plot forward?
They certainly condense a lot too. Like the Bible is very, very large, and they just took the relevant pieces that they needed to tell the story.
Exactly.
And I think something that's really important to think about as well is, what mythology are you using, and is it appropriate for you to use it? And there's a whole huge discussion to be had, and that is being had by people, about what you should write about, what you have the expertise to write about, what harm can you cause about writing things that you don't know enough about. And I don't think that I or anybody can tell you exactly where that line is objectively every time, but I think it's really important to consider if this is a story that you should be telling, if this is mythology that is something that you can play around with or not. And you have to think about that and whether you're going to cause harm or whether it's going to be something good.
I think a good
also
question.
Higher sensitivity readers.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, if you do. Yeah, any mythology, but especially if you're dabbling in any kind of mythology that is outside of your cultural or spiritual background, absolutely need sensitivity readers.
I think a good question to ask in that area also is, is this mythology from a culture that has been historically oppressed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's a good one to start with, because if it is, then you maybe need to think about it, at least think about it some more, or talk to some people from that culture and be like, am I appropriating your mythology if I use it in this manner? Mm-hmm. Is it
a very complicated discussion, and one that you definitely need to think a lot about, talk to lots of people about, and research a lot before you get into it. And that's closing time. Thank you so much for joining us at the tavern. We hope to serve you here again. Now scram.
Bye.